This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey, welcome to Tech Talk, and my name is Jeff Zandu. Over the past few years, technology has transformed almost everything you could imagine, from the way we travel to how we interact with each other, and this has resulted in changing consumer behavior and expectations. More choices than ever before, and the power of the internet at their fingertips, consumers are no longer driven by just loyalty. They are seeking greater value from each transaction and demand the absolute best in user experience. Bank Bazaar, an online financial services and marketplace, has recently launched its online operations in Malaysia, BBazaar, that provides Malaysian users access to various financial products from multiple banks and financial institutions. But it's more than just offering. It's personalization that's the key here. And with me today is...
My name is Vipin Kalra. I am the Chief Executive Officer of Bank Bazaar International, or as we call here in Malaysia, BBazaar.
Vipin, let's talk about the foundation of Bank Bazaar and how did this all begin?
So it all started with a pain point that the founders had about 10 years ago. The founders were born and brought up in India. They studied in the U.S., worked in the U.S., came back to India and looking to buy a property. And just didn't know where to go, which bank would offer them a better deal. They had to go branch to branches. They had to stand up in queues and wait for someone to come and talk to them. And they was given a rack rate. And they just know, in fact, how to get the best deal. And that's where the idea came from. Clearly, it is still an issue in many markets where consumers find it difficult to figure out what's the right financial product for them and how to go about it. Am I eligible or not? Is it the right suitable product for me? Would it make sense for me in short term and long term or not? So that's where the idea came from of creating a marketplace.
And I'm sure developing something like this in India as well would have been really difficult.
Well, it took us almost 8 years to get to a point where we can call ourselves a reasonably mature organization and a mature platform. It was very tough. It was very hard. All the way from conceiving the idea, building the technology platform, and then convincing the banks to come and participate with us on this marketplace and bring their product to the marketplace so we can offer those products to the consumers. It was a foreign concept.
Did they see y'all as a threat instead?
I think initially they may have seen us as a competition, but then they realized that actually this is not actually a competition. A Bank Bazaar is simply trying to build another digital channel for us. It's actually quite complementary to what we're already doing on our own channel.
But you're working with different banks as well. So for a particular financial institution to be like, if I'm not, you know, having a good enough deal for my consumer, I'm going to lose out here immediately.
Yes, that piece took a little while to get their minds around. There's no doubt about that. Frankly, the banks are traditionally very used to bringing consumers to their channels, be it a physical channel like branches or through the relationship managers, over the phone, through a website, or even through the mobile banking platforms. All of those channels are bank-owned channels, so banks are very used to and very comfortable with dealing with consumers on their own channel. For a bank to even think about taking their product to someone else's channel or someone else's domain to offer to a completely stranger, potentially, it was a difficult concept to get over. But eventually they did. I think they realized that in the end, the banks, or whether that's a bank or a retailer or any other business in the world, they have to follow where the consumer is going. And if consumers are looking to do search and compare before they buy, then that's an inevitable trend. It's growing because of the growth of internet, because of the growth of e-commerce. And as a result, it's only natural for that e-commerce trend to continue into financial services area as well. And I think eventually banks understood.
And besides the mindset shift that needed to happen, I'm sure there were a lot more, you know, difficulties in trying to get this into a reality 8 years before you were mature enough. And throughout these 8 years, what was that hurdle besides the mindset? Was it just working with data or, you know, working with financial institutions that are highly highly regulated, and you know, sharing sensitive information may not be something that they're used to. What was, you know, those challenges like?
All of the above and many more, of course. I mean, of course, these were very common challenges. Convincing a compliance officer of a financial institution that I'm going to bring my customer to you, and by the way, they are my customer first before they become your customer, was not an easy conversation, obviously, you can imagine. However, they did understand that this is the future, this is the way of future. They have to work with someone else's consumer, and retailers have learned to do it, and as a financial institution, I need to learn to do it too. It wasn't easy for a legal counsel of a very large financial institution to say, you know, we would have a joint ownership of data. This is, again, a very foreign concept for any financial institution, in fact, for any institution for that matter. But again, there are business models that are emerging where multiple parties have a joint ownership of data. So these are some of the initial hurdles from a conceptual perspective, but are also sort of more, you know, at a more tactical sort of place. Just taking trying to build a platform that replaces paper was probably the biggest challenge we had. Trying to identify a consumer without needing for consumer to go into a bank branch and producing, you know, 10 forms of IDs and a thick paper, a bundle of paper, wasn't easy, obviously, to get over that and build all of those technology capabilities to digitize all of that paperwork, to deal with the consumer remotely without needing a consumer for a consumer to be present, was a mammoth task. But I think we did it. Of course, the regulators also helped. In case of India, India had gone, in my opinion, from being a very backward place from a digitization perspective to now almost leading the world in terms of the way the government and the regulators have built what they call this India stack, which starts all the way by from a point where they allocated a digital ID to every citizen. It's, by the way, it's a biometric ID, which has a fingerprint sort of encoded in it, and then creating a set of layers, software layers, that allows all the KYC, know your customer, the identification of a customer captured in electronic fashion. And then opening up to third parties, so third parties can take advantage of that electronic information and can start to deal with the consumer in a remote fashion. Because we know this fact that consumers are very savvy these days. Everyone has a mobile device. In fact, many, in almost 70% of the cases in most markets, it's a smartphone. We all are connected to internet 24/7. So why isn't a possibility that a consumer could be at a very remote location? They can provide all their documentation electronically. They can even provide their digitized picture electronically from a remote location, and even provide a thumbprint if they weren't able to sign in a digitized fashion, because everything has been digitized, and open a bank account or start a financial loan of some sort, right?
And how many countries do you now operate, starting in India first, and now what are we looking at?
So we started in India, obviously. We wanted to make sure that before we venture into other markets, we have a well-established technology platform and a well-established digital marketing practice. And so we did that in India for the first 8 years, and then 2 years later, 2 years ago, I'm sorry, we started the business in Singapore. And this year we started in Malaysia. So Malaysia is our third market, only second outside of India.
Were there changes that needed to happen in order to fit, you know, different countries? Moving to Singapore first, right? From India, why Singapore? What was the reasoning that Singapore would be the ideal second spot for you?
For a number of reasons, we chose Singapore as our second market. We had gained a lot of experience in working in a massive, however, under-penetrated, deeply under-penetrated market like India, where the penetration of financial services, electronification of payments and banking product, and the credit quality is very, very low. And we wanted to go to a market which was more mature market, but manageable, controllable market. So it's not a large market like a US or Canada for that matter. So we decided to venture into Singapore. It's obviously a much easier place to do business with as well. The regulator is very friendly, fintech friendly. The environment is perfect for any new company to get started at a very low cost and get going.
Mm. And financial institutions are very welcoming of platforms like this.
They were reasonably welcoming, yes. Again, we had similar challenges, but not to the same degree as we had in India, of convincing financial institutions to follow the consumer. I think that was the biggest, that is always the very first challenge in any conversation, to convince a financial institution that A, that we are not competing with you, and B, we are simply following the consumer, we're helping you follow where the consumer is going, and the consumers are going on marketplaces searching for the best product, we might as well partner with you and bring those customers back to you.
Right. Before we move to Malaysia and your presence here now, 8 years in India, and you talk about how it's bringing businesses to the financial institutions, it's bringing your customers to them. What's it been like in terms of just the number of activities that you've had in India that really showed benefits to the financial institutions in India?
Yeah, so look, India sets a very good example for many other markets to follow. Of course, it's a very large market, so we have to sort of calibrate these numbers for each market. But in the last 12 months, we've seen 300 million consumers coming to our website in the last 12 months alone. Of those 300 million, so that clearly shows that we know how to drive a digitally savvy consumers to a marketplace like ours.
Mm-hmm.
We're very good at digital marketing, clearly, that shows that. Secondly, we have now done a business where we've converted 1.5 million of those applications into successful conversion of a financial product. In other words, 1.5 million people ended up buying a financial product through our website.
Right. So the journey goes all the way to the end then.
Absolutely. So I think that just also shows that we are not only good at driving the traffic to our website, but also good at the conversion as well. We work with the banks very closely. Wherever possible, we try to solve the process problem through technology and make the process paperless, frictionless, and totally digital.
Mm-hmm.
So we can create better efficiency in the overall system. Consumers are happy. They're getting what they want in a very shortest period of time. Banks are happy because they're getting a much better yield and much better return on their investment because of the highly efficient process that we've created. And there's no paper involved in any of this. There's no wastage.
Mm. So where is the end journey for consumers in Bank Bazaar? Is it then, getting a quotation via phone call from an agent somewhere or, leading off to a different platform where you then still have to visit the agent itself? Where's the end journey? Is having what I wanted in terms of the financial, whether it's insurance, loans and, credit cards, is it getting the item itself the end journey here?
Yeah. So this is very much where we think we are very unique, and our offering is much more end-to-end because we are deeply integrated with the financial institution and many of these financial institutions. So the consumer journey begins by searching a product and then finding the right product. We match the right financial product with the right kind of consumers. In other words, we match the right financial institution with the right financial with the right consumer. So we can get the best match both for consumers as well as for financial institutions, right? Because financial institutions don't want a certain type of customer. They have certain focus. They are targeting certain segments. We can give them those type of segments by targeting those customers better. From a consumer point of view, of course, we want that's our main goal, is to make sure that we provide the best advice and the best options for consumers so they can make the right choice, right?
Mm.
That's where the journey starts. But then we work with the financial institution to make sure that we go all the way in terms of validating the consumer, completing all the documentation, completing the whole application process, and then working with the bank to make sure that even bank sometime may require our help in underwriting, in scoring this customer, better profiling the customer. Because we have a lot of data as well in this whole process that we've collected over many years, we can make sometime a stronger case for certain type of customers for the banks. So we do help our financial institution to make a better decision on whether this is the right kind of customer, what's the risk profile, can I get sharper in terms of assessing the customer profile, in terms of a risk profile, right? And therefore, can I make a better decision in the end, right? So we help the financial institution all the way to the end of the underwriting process. So the consumer can get that product in the fastest possible manner. And if they're eligible for a product, then let's make sure that the traditional way of doing business is not hindering that process.
Yeah.
Let's find new ways of doing the business.
I'm speaking to Vipin Karla. He's the CEO of Bank Bazaar International. And when we come back, we'll talk about data and how it empowers your business and why financial institutions can't seem to do this themselves. BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
This is Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandhu, CEO of Bank Bazaar, or in Malaysia, it's known as B Bazaar. Vipin Karla is with me today. We're talking about how they broke through this fintech space in India and their growth success and how they're operating in this buzzword of an industry, fintech. Vipin, so it's all about data, hence you know what is best for your customers. But why can't financial institutions do this themselves? They too have data about their customers, right?
It's a very interesting question, and I think financial institutions have traditionally relied upon their customer data, and the customer data comes from their own customer. So institutions are very good at dealing with their existing customers, but they're not very good at dealing with someone who's either new to the bank or new to financial services altogether. If I'm a student and I started first time working and I wanted a loan to fund either my first mortgage or to buy a car or a vehicle, then the banks wouldn't know how to score this person apart from the fact that they only know that I'm a student and this is my first salary, right? So how do we underwrite a loan for such a customer in a more efficient manner, right? Now, this is where the fintech is making the biggest advancement, in my opinion, where the fintech companies like ourselves, we are using this alternate data that we are picking from other channels and other places to have a better handle on the customer profile and then work on the propensity of either a risk or a consumer being a good customer, right? We're picking for signs where either there is an early sign of stress, financial stress, or an early sign of a good behavior or a long history of good behavior, even better, right? And that information comes from a lot of other channels which financial institutions either don't have access to or hadn't ventured into those areas before. And I think fintech companies like ourselves, we give them that opportunity to augment their existing data with this alternate set of data, which enhances the overall score and their decision making.
And where do you gather this data? You gave the example of, you know, a student, you know, just graduated, started his, you know, first job and is now looking to, you know, get a loan for a car, for example. How do you get more information about them in order to serve them better? Because they're strangers, again, to you, coming up to you in completely, you know, in a clueless fashion. Yeah. So how does it work in the front end of a Bank Bazaar?
Yeah. So data science is becoming a deep science. And this is where the whole AI and the deep machine learning piece is going as well, that we are picking up data sets from all sorts of sources that are totally unrelated. But when you put those sources together and you start to identify certain patterns and start to link those patterns with a certain customer behavior, you start to find some very interesting things. So some of the examples may be, and these are purely as examples, the way you use your mobile phone tells you how good or bad you could be or what sort of consumer you are, right? The way you shop online, because everyone is doing shopping through their mobile devices or even desktop, your shopping behavior can give away a lot of signals in terms of how frequently you shop, how well you are in terms of your money management, how good you are in terms of your savings and your credit management. Are you using credit cards? Are you using your bank accounts to pay for these things? So you can pick up a lot of these signals to then build a better profile of the customer. Now, this is not an alarming signal, by the way. These are good signals that give a better understanding of the customer. Now, that understanding could be used in a positive way or a negative way. If you're looking at the positive signal to see, I'm looking for more positive signals to make sure that I can give this person a loan, then that's a good thing. And a lot of the positive bureaus around the world are trying to do the same thing for the financial institution. And the regulators are really encouraging those type of activities. On the negative side, you want to pick up any bad history. And again, traditionally, the credit bureaus have picked up and gathered that data over years and years and helped banks make decisions based on the historical data. where this whole thing is going with the fintech is that we are now picking up signals at a much shorter intervals. You don't have to wait for 20-year history to establish a pattern. You can simply look at someone's behavior over a month and you can establish certain behavior and patterns and start to relate. And these are totally unrelated things.
Yeah.
Sometime, but they create very interesting sort of combinations.
It's using data to now also predict what would happen and what can happen.
Correct. So again, we use these signals to build what we call propensity models, mm-hmm. right? Or which is a predictable models to say that what is the likelihood of this customer being a good customer or a bad customer. So if once you build those models, whenever a new customer comes in, you measure that against. This customer is like A but not like B, and therefore, what's the likelihood of this person being a good or bad? On a scale of 10, if it is 9 or 8, I'm willing to give this person an extra loan. If this person is below 6, hey, you know, it could be a risky case. I might not have the appetite to go that far.
Vipin, we have to, since we're talking about data, I will have to ask you, in recent weeks, we've seen Facebook with the scandal with Cambridge Analytica, and it's all about data. If one thing that Facebook thought us was, the color, my favorite color, or where I ate yesterday, where did I eat yesterday, what did I eat? It's some data that's valuable to someone. And you're working with data. How are you ensuring that there is positives in using data for benefits instead of manipulation and distortion of what's fact? And working with data is your core here. How are you now looking forward to a world where it's sort of taken a little dent in our dreams of having this open world and data is being shared, information is shared freely and available easily?
Yeah. Look, I think we need to break this whole equation of data management into three pieces. In my opinion, data is now free. It's available, it's out there. Whether we like it or not, we have given a lot of data on our social media and on the internet, mostly unknowingly and sometimes knowingly as well, for the right reasons, right? So the data is already out. So capturing a data set is not necessarily an issue anymore now, right? That train has left the station a long time ago. Where the focus needs to be for industry to deal with the data in a more responsible manner is how we store the data so it doesn't get misused, and how responsibly we use it, and making sure that the customer is aware of where the data is being used. Right. So coming to the point of storage, I mean, we have seen across the world, all sorts of security breaches and data breaches where the CEO had lost their jobs because the data breach was so so acute and so intense that it had such a huge impact on the business, right? And the CEOs have to sort of go. We also seen the proliferation of a lot of fraudulent activity as a result of people stealing the data. So keeping data secure is still an important issue. But I think even more important issue, in my opinion, is how do we use data responsibly? Then storage also becomes even less relevant, frankly. Right. So again, today, in case of Bank Bazaar, we are ISO 27000 certified company. This is the highest standard you can ask for any information security. That gives us the confidence that that when we keep the data in our systems, it's secure. And maintaining that consumer confidence is critical for us, that we can make sure we can put our hand on our heart and say that this data is going to be secure and it's not going to be stolen by some sort of rogue sort of player on the internet. But more important aspect, in my opinion, is how we use that data. This is where the regulator, I think, have to do a much bigger job with the industry, in collaboration with the industry, to set some very tight and higher standards. And I think the regulator in Malaysia has already done a fantastic job in terms of setting up very clear guidelines. PDPA is highly enforced. PDPA stands for Personal Data Protection Act, which basically says, which clearly sort of outlines the boundaries within which the industry must operate in terms of dealing with the customer data, particularly if it's the personal information data, related data. So I think we have to continue to lift the game and raise the bar in terms of tightening those law and rules so the data is not getting misused, right? Once we have that sort of behavior in place, and if every company starts to act in a responsible manner, the storage or access to data is no longer going to be an issue in future.
And talking about Malaysia, you're now active here in Malaysia since the turn of the year, but the name has changed, B-Bazaar. What were some of these changes that needed to happen in order for you to be active here in Malaysia?
We had to obviously customize our offering and our platform for the local market. As I mentioned earlier on, our technology platform is state-of-the-art. We do take a lot of pride in terms of saying that, hey, we can cut a new country in 6 to 8 weeks. Hmm. And we did that when we started in Malaysia. And within 8 weeks, we were ready. Our technology platform was customized to deal with the Malaysian consumers. We had to obviously work with the regulatory sort of framework and make sure that we comply with all the PDPA requirements. Now, in case of Malaysia, of course, we are not allowed to call bank, and therefore we had to even change our name from Bank Bazaar to B-Bazaar. But that's okay. Mm. You know, over time, we believe that consumers will realize that it's a global brand that we are trying to build. It's just like Amazon, just like Google, just like Facebook. People, once they start trusting these brands, they would automatically go to these brands to look for the product that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And we hope that we will be able to bring the similar sort of offering to the consumer in Malaysia as well, where consumers will trust our brand, come to us looking for a financial product, and hopefully will be satisfied so they can come back again.
So what can they find on bbazaar.my?
They should be able to see very soon. We are just about to bring our partner banks on board. They should be able to see a range of credit card offerings, a range of personal loan offerings, and then from there onwards, we will start to build additional product lines such as car loans, such as home loan, and then we'll venture into the insurance and investment products and mutual funds and things like that.
What are you expecting from the Malaysian market? Because you know you started off in India, very big market, and then you moved to Singapore, a very small, unique market. And then Malaysia, we kind of fit somewhere in between here. So what's your expectations or hopes for the Malaysian market?
I think it's a very good point. We think that Malaysia will be a fantastic market for us. As you quite rightly say, we have an experience of a very large but a little bit fragmented market like India, but also very underpenetrated market. Mm. We also have now experience of a very mature but very tight market like Singapore. It's small. It's very mature, but it's very confined market. You're right. Malaysia will be somewhere in between. It has a lot more similarities to Singapore, but also it has certain common points to a country like India in terms of its geographic reach, in terms of the population is obviously not as large as India, but at least it's better than Singapore. We are about 30, 32 million people. So we think that it will be very interesting for us to scale the business faster in a country like Malaysia. My understanding is Malaysians are very technical, techno-savvy. They're all connected. 80% of the population is
consumer-heavy. Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. So I don't think we should underestimate the consumer in Malaysia at all. I think the consumers are very savvy in Malaysia, and our offering will appeal to a savvy consumer. Mm.
And there are some challenges or competitors already active and present here in the local market, maybe slightly different in terms of the end offering. How are you going about that in trying to, you know, embed that mindset that, you know, this is what we offer, that's what they offer, and trying to differentiate yourselves in a very noisy market at the end of the day?
I think competition is good in some respect because, frankly, rather than us doing all the groundwork in terms of educating the consumer, educating financial institutions, educating even the regulators about what a marketplace or what a comparison site could look like, a lot of our competitors have already primed the market. You know, they've educated the market already. So, frankly, the scene is set for us to come in and take this whole game to another level because we know that we are very, very strong in our technology and our technical capabilities. We are also very strong in this data-driven science that drives digital marketing at the end of the day. And if we can bring those two things together in Malaysia, we have a winning combination. Mm. So we are very excited about Malaysian market. I think the scene is set. The regulator has provided the right setting in terms of the framework. The consumers are very savvy. Financial institutions are quite used to dealing with third parties, and we're just going to take the whole experience to another level, I think.
How does your business model work in the sense you're offering solutions and products and services from, you know, financial institutions and banks? So how does it work? Because for me as a consumer, there's no charges that I'm paying to BeBazaar here.
No. So our business model works on the basis that consumers do not pay anything to avail services of BankBazaar or BeBazaar in Malaysia. We purely work on a commission basis with the banks. Banks would pay us for the leads that we bring to them, but also on the basis that we would create an end-to-end, much more efficient process. So the lead that come through our channels would have a much more higher propensity to get converted into an end product. In other words, consumers who come through BeBazaar will end up having a higher probability of getting approved for a financial product. So because of that, obviously, you know, we want to sort of position ourselves as a premium player. We are a much more quality player. We are much more a deeper end-to-end player. We do want to integrate with banks much more deeply, so not only we can give consumers a better experience, but also we can assist the banks in making the right decision.
And looking ahead, where do you think BankBazaar or BeBazaar would be? You mentioned the Amazons, the eBays, the Googles, the Facebooks, and these are large firms who are really using data for their benefits and growing a very large consumer base and spreading around the world now. Where do you see BankBazaar or BeBazaar going to be in the next coming years, and how long do you think it's going to take to that dream?
Yeah, look, we are very mindful of the fact that we have just started the journey. We don't want to get carried away by the big dreams, but we do have dreams. We want to make sure that in every market we go in, we have a sustainable business model. We don't want to do what some of other fintech or startup companies have tried to do, where they take the money from the investors and spend most of it in marketing deals, try to create a huge amount of customer base, hoping that one day somebody will come and buy us out. We are not in that sort of game. We are here for long run. We are here to build a long-term sustainable business, and therefore the business has to be built on a profitable basis. Right? So we want to be sure that in every market we go in, we have a clear business plan, we execute on business plan with the razor focus, and then we deliver the right return for our investor before we start to venture into other markets. Now, when I said before, not necessarily we will do everything sequentially. We would, of course, have to run in parallel and work on a number of markets in parallel. And this is where the rounds of funding that we have done in past have helped us in terms of securing the amount of funding that we require to scale up, but also to bring some of our new investors and partners and build their confidence in our company. Having a very clean fundamental sort of business model helps convince not only consumers that they can trust our brand, but also convince our investors and other partners like financial institutions that we are here to stay. We are not here for a short-term experimental journey. We're here for a long-term sustainable journey.
And I guess people can experience BeBazaar for .my for quite a long time now and play around with it, I guess.
Absolutely. We are here to stay, and hopefully we will grow this brand and our business in many other markets. So the consumers in many markets would be able to see us as a channel that they can come to at a marketplace where they can freely go, they can trust that whatever we do, we will always have the consumer interest in mind.
And the beauty of technology is that if you want to expand to a different country, it's like you mentioned, it's a few clicks away, you can expand to a different country.
Absolutely. We totally believe in flexible and scalable business model. We already had a dream and vision that we will eventually scale into many more markets. And therefore, what we built is built on the basis that it's totally scalable and configurable. So yes, we take a lot of pride in terms of what we build, and hope that we can prove to our Malaysian partners and Malaysian consumers that we have a very unique offering, and we are here to stay.
And I've been speaking to Vipin Karla, the CEO of BankBazaar, and over here in Malaysia, it's BeBazaar, talking about their success story in breaking through the crowded buzzword of an industry, the fintech space. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.